I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, trade war. The world reacts to President Trump's increasing tariffs on China. We're at the White House. Moving ahead, House Republicans pass a budget blueprint for next year, opening the door to pass President Trump's agenda. Concerns for the faithful. Human rights organizations issue dire warnings for Catholics under the Ortega regime in Nicaragua. Plus, faith and charity. Learn all about a way to support Christians in the Holy Land on Good Friday. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump holds a cabinet meeting just a day after pausing his tariffs on dozens of nations. China is an exception. In fact, the White House now clarifies the U.S. is hitting the communist country with 145% tariffs. That's up from the earlier 125% figure. Wall Street responds with a sharp drop after Wednesday's historic jump. The president said today, everybody wants to come and make a deal. White House correspondent Owen Jensen has more from a busy day in D.C.
Monsi, the cabinet meeting here at the White House today was originally not scheduled to be open to the press, but then early this afternoon that changed, as is often the case here at the White House. Reporters were ushered into the cabinet room, and President Trump was asked about the next steps for China.
Well, we'll see what happens with China. We would love to be able to work a deal. They've really taken advantage of our country for a long period of time.
As the dust begins to settle from days of tariffs being threatened, imposed, and paused, the drama still unfolding. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says countries want to talk and talk now.
And they have come with offers that they never, ever, ever would have come with, but for the moves that the president has made.
The European Union puts the brakes on its plan to retaliate against the U.S., matching America's 90-day pause to leave room for a negotiated solution. As for how that proceeds,
We're looking at it as one block. They've been very tough, but they were very smart. They were ready to announce retaliation. And then they heard about what we did with respect to China and others, but China.
President Trump got some good news on the economic front as inflation cooled last month. Trump's rapid response team calls it the first drop in consumer prices in 3 years. The White House also reports prescription drug prices saw the largest monthly decline. Prices for airfare, used vehicles, and car insurance all decreased. And energy prices fell in March, driven by plummeting gas prices. Earlier on the North Lawn, I asked the Agriculture Secretary this.
What do you expect the impact on U.S. farmers to be from the Chinese 84% tariff imposition?
Well, we're looking at that every day. We have teams across the government, whether it's USTR or Commerce or Treasury, of course, USDA. We've got teams that are literally hour by hour watching that. This president has a vision of realigning the American economy to ensure that we are putting America first.
Now, Brooke Rollins also told me the USDA will ensure that U.S. farmers are taken care of. And more tariff fallout. China said today it will reduce the number of U.S. films that it imports. And when President Trump heard that, he joked saying he's heard of worse things. And that drew a lot of laughter in the cabinet room. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks so much, Owen. Well, we're happy to welcome back to the program Gordon Chang, lawyer and author. Gordon, thank you for joining us again. Now, China has said that it's willing to fight to the end in a tariff war, and President Trump is showing no signs of backing down in this trade war between China and the U.S. Who is most likely to win?
I think we're most likely to win. First of all, we're the bigger economy. Also, we are the trade deficit economy. Last year, China ran a $295.4 billion merchandise trade surplus. Trade surplus countries have everything to lose. The only way that Xi Jinping wins this is that he convinces President Trump to back down, even though Trump knows he's holding the high cards. And the only way that Xi Jinping can do that is to get constituent elements in the United States, Wall Street, farmers, Main Street, C-suites, to put pressure on Trump. But Trump has been made very clear. He believes in what he's doing. So I don't think the Chinese have got the ammunition to get our president to surrender in this.
Now, but why are they so adamant about remaining in this trade war and not negotiating?
Well, first of all, Xi Jinping has configured the Chinese political system so that only the most hostile answers are considered to be acceptable. So even though it's economically rational for him to pick up the phone to the White House, he can't be seen to be doing that in Beijing. But also, the reason why China is so adamant, they know that their economy is more trade dependent than it's ever been. And so they've got to make sure that they have access to markets, and they have they can't afford to open up theirs to the United States, because then everybody else will try to pile into China. And Beijing does not want to see that.
Gordon, China has reached out to the European Union to form closer ties to some of our allies. Could they try to create a united front against the United States?
I'm sure that that's what they're trying to do. They got one big problem, though, and that is the U.S. consumer market is the biggest in the world. Everybody needs to sell things to the United States. And that's why when President Trump's pausing tariffs on everybody and saying we'll negotiate with Japan, South Korea, and the EU, I think that the Chinese are pretty concerned about that. And that's why I think we're seeing some pretty belligerent rhetoric out of Beijing. But I think that's a front.
Well, we're all watching and feeling this, the effects of this trade war. If it does continue, then what effects can we see and expect to see across the globe?
I think that we probably will see a little bit increase in consumer prices, but not as much as people fear. And the reason is that supply chains are going to readjust. They're going to move from countries where the tariffs are high, the American tariffs are high, to countries where the tariffs are lower. And that is just sort of the way that trade works. It's never a bilateral matter, U.S. versus China. It's always multilateral. And we see the global system is flexible and it can adjust.
Now, Gordon, quickly switching subjects, we've seen that you've followed the imprisonment of Jimmy Lai over the past couple of years now. I mean, 2020 was when he was first arrested. Is it possible that this back and forth with China could also include a deal to release him?
The release of Jimmy Lai is always in the cards. And the reason is he's 75, 76. He's not in good health. And the last thing that China wants to see is Jimmy dying in prison. That would make him even more of a martyr than he is. So Beijing has got to get him out some way. And yes, the trade war can cause complications in that, but also it can create an opening, because at the end of the day, Beijing does not want him in prison for that much longer.
Well, we'll keep praying for him and his safety. Gordon Chang, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Russia has freed a Russian-American prisoner as part of another exchange with the United States. Ksenia Karolina was convicted of treason last year on charges stemming from a donation of around $52 to a charity aiding Ukraine. The former ballerina lived in Los Angeles and was arrested when she returned to Russia to visit her family. The U.S. exchanged a man arrested on charges of smuggling sensitive microelectronics to Russia. A big win for House Speaker Mike Johnson and President Donald Trump. House Republicans passed the budget blueprint for next year. It passed the House 216 to 214, with two Republicans voting with Democrats against it. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest.
Good evening, Monse. The two Republicans who voted against the budget blueprint were Thomas Massie of Kentucky and Victoria Sparks of Indiana. Both claim that the resolution didn't have any spending cuts and would increase the deficit by trillions of dollars. Prior to the vote, House Speaker Mike Johnson and Senate Majority Leader John Thune held a joint press conference, promising to find at least $1.5 trillion in savings while also preserving essential programs.
The Democrats are out right now trying to make hay out of the fact that we're going to gut Medicaid and all these other things. It's simply not true. We're going to protect the essential programs for everybody who's eligible to receive those.
We are aligned with the House in terms of what their budget resolution outlined in terms of savings. The speakers talked about $1.5 trillion. We have a lot of United States senators who believe that is a minimum.
Republicans say the final product will include increased spending for border security, defense, energy, along with tax priorities. Republicans who were on the fence days ago say the guarantees of $1.5 trillion in cuts were good enough for them.
We agreed to the House framework, and the House leadership has now agreed that we will maintain the House framework, which assures that we do not have an increase in the budget deficit with unpaid tax cuts.
We will not put a bill on the floor of our chamber that adds to the national debt, which is a deferred tax on our children.
But Republican Congressman Thomas Massie says he would be surprised if any cuts materialize.
This is a framework for financial collapse of our country is what this is. This is a framework for the biggest deficit increase in the history of Congress.
Democrats claim that Americans will pay the price.
What concerns you about this bill?
It's not this bill, it's what's following it, right? They're going to hit Social Security and Medicare.
It is not about trimming budgets. It's about looting from working and middle-class people and the poor and giving it to the rich.
It is important to note that this is only the first step in the reconciliation process. Now Republicans will have to draft President Trump's agenda into a bill. But Senate Republicans are already saying that they won't support Medicaid or Social Security cuts. So it's a long way from getting the finished bill to the president's desk. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Trump also wants to invigorate energy production, and his recent executive order to execute part of the plan might put the Department of Justice on a collision course with state laws targeting greenhouse gas pollution. The president revealed the order earlier this week at an event backing the coal industry. This comes as U.S. electricity demand ramps up to meet the growth of artificial intelligence and cloud computing applications. For more, we turn to Dan Misle, executive director of the Catholic Climate Covenant. Dan, it's great to be with you. If and when the Department of Justice attempts to overturn a state climate law, how would they go about it? What would that look like?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that it's interesting that the Trump administration wants to overturn these laws, but the states have, they have legislatures, they have executives, they have courts. And so I think that it will be difficult for the Trump administration to simply roll back laws that are already on the books.
Now, while there is a lot of pushback to this executive order, the American petroleum industry applauded the move, saying that it will help restore the rule of law from, quote, activist-driven campaigns. How would you respond to that?
Look, Benedict XVI, Pope Francis, Pope John Paul, St. John Paul II, all talked about the need to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels because it's contributing to climate change and the warming of our planet. Every state in this country almost has had the impacts from climate change, whether they recognize that or not. So we have to begin to dramatically reduce the use of fossil fuels in order to protect the future for our children and grandchildren.
When you say about the future and you talk about how your Catholic faith guides a lot of this work, you spent 11 years at the USCCB as a policy advisor. What is your advice to the faithful on how they think about these issues from a policy perspective?
Well, I think we need to think about them in terms of God's good gift of creation to all of us. And in Genesis, we were called to be caretakers with God for the planet. It's not unlimited in its resources, and so we have to conserve those resources not only for ourselves but for future generations. And so I think we ought to look at this in terms of the beautiful gift that God has given us and the need to take care of it better.
What comes next then with this executive order, and how do you see this playing out?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of things that are happening within this administration at the present time. A lot of these things are going to the courts. So we'll just have to wait and see. I think many of the states will say, look, these are states' rights. Every state has the ability to, create its own laws and enforce those laws and carry out those laws. So we'll see. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't really know how this will all play out.
Well, thank you so much, Dan, for being with us. Dan Misle, Executive Director of the Catholic Climate Covenant.
Thank you.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including sounding the alarm, new fears for the faithful living under the Ortega regime in Nicaragua, and analysis of the Trump administration's attempts to deport people they say are gang members from Venezuela. Preparations for large processions during Holy Week are underway across Latin America, except for Nicaragua. For the second consecutive year, the Ortega regime has largely banned outdoor faith-based activities. This comes as human rights activists warn the government's crackdown on the church is worsening. More than 200 religious figures are in exile, making it difficult to hold mass or even hear confessions. Memorials have begun for the victims of the deadly roof collapse at a nightclub in the Dominican Republic. Family members and loved ones are still waiting for the identities of some of the more than 200 who were killed in the tragedy. Pope Francis offered prayers for the victims and those affected while encouraging everyone to persevere in their efforts to assist and accompany them. Judges in Texas and New York temporarily barred the U.S. government from deporting Venezuelans jailed in parts of those two states. This comes just after the Supreme Court ruled the deportations can resume, but deportees must be given a court hearing before they're flown away. Civil rights lawyers in the two states had sued to prevent the government from deporting five men alleged to be part of the Tren de Aragua gang. The men deny the claims. This all centers on the Alien Enemies Act and whether the Trump administration is using it correctly. For more, we turn to John Deaton, a trial attorney and former U.S. Marine. John, thank you for being with us. To unpack all of this confusion, first off, tell us more about this ruling from New York and Texas and how it relates to what the Supreme Court did earlier this week.
Well, the Supreme Court basically gave the Trump administration a pretty big win because they were using this act from 1798, which has only been used in times of war or when a country is invading the United States. And the Trump administration used it, which bypasses traditional immigration laws under Title VIII of the U.S. Code. And the Supreme Court, 5-4, said you can do it, except you can't just arrest them and deport them. You got to give them a fair notice hearing, which could be as little as 24 hours notice in order for them to challenge the deportation. And so it's a big win because the normal process, there's 3 million cases under the normal immigration process, and this gives some teeth to Trump's deportation agenda.
Now, John, take us inside the pushback against the Trump administration's use of the Alien Enemies Act. Critics say that it's not lawful use because the U.S. has not declared war, even though they have declared a war on drugs. How do you respond to that?
Listen, it's a fair response. It's never been used. You know, it was used by FDR to basically put Japanese American citizens in internment camps as well as Nazi members in America during World War II. And the Trump administration, I think they were just saying, listen, let's try to figure out a different way to do this. And so they invoked this act. And it's fair criticism to say it's never been done. But at the same time, it shows you that this Supreme Court is allowing President Trump to have great discretion when it comes to national security measures, immigration, and foreign policy. And so it depends on where you stand in the political aisle. It was a tightly fought case, 5-4. So it was very narrow. But due process matters. And unanimously, even though the court's divided, said you have to have due process. You have to give them a fair hearing. And so that's where we stand.
Well, legal challenges similar to what happened in Texas and New York are expected in other states. So this debate is going to continue. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think the next challenge is what constitutes fair notice and due process. Will 24 hours be enough? Will 48 hours be enough? Will they be allowed to present witnesses? So we're going to see another ruling go up to the Supreme Court probably in the next 6 months. All I can tell you is there's going to be a lot of litigation about this issue for sure.
Well, we'll be watching it and tracking it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, speaking out, what church leaders in Colorado are saying about a pro-abortion measure from the state's governor. Plus, a chance next Friday to help the faithful in the Holy Land. Welcome back. Pope Francis has once again made a surprise visit, this time to the tomb of St. Pius X at St. Peter's Basilica. The news of the Holy Father's presence quickly spread, and the faithful gathered to greet him. The Pope has been recovering in his apartments in the Casa Santa Marta in Vatican City. Bishops in Colorado are urging the state's governor to veto a bill which would put at least $1.5 million of public funding annually toward Medicaid-covered abortions. The bill has already passed the State House and Senate. In a letter to Governor Jared Polis, the bishops say in part, quote, "Every human life, from conception to natural death, is a sacred gift from God. No act of law can change this truth, nor can it erase our moral obligation to defend the most vulnerable among us." Next week marks an annual initiative that supports Christians in the Holy Land. The Good Friday Collection is the main source of funds for the maintenance of some of the most venerated and visited Christian shrines in the world. It's part of the Holy Father's push to strengthen the ties between the faithful and the Holy Land. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Father David Grenier, the Commissary of the Holy Land for the U.S. Father David, what is the Good Friday Collection and how does it actually help people in the Holy Land? What kind of an impact does it make on the ground?
And the Good Friday Collection was brought by Pope Paul VI in 1974 to help the Church in the Holy Land and help maintain the shrines of Christianity and help maintain the Christian community that is living over there. Because, as St. Paul said in the second letter to the Corinthians, we all have a debt towards the Christians of the Holy Land because that's where the Church came from. If we have faith today in the U.S., it's because people from Jerusalem thousands of years ago spread the news, the good news of Christ, and shared with us what they had experienced when Jesus Christ fulfilled our redemption in the holy places.
Amen. And there's not such a wonderful time right now to really lean into that experience as we pray through the end of Lent toward the resurrection. Father, you're a Franciscan of the Custody of the Holy Land. That's a very specific title. Can you tell us exactly what that is and the kind of work that you and your brothers do in the region?
Yeah, a few years ago in 1342, Pope Clement VI entrusted all the shrines of Christianity to the Franciscans. So we're responsible of 85 shrines all over the Middle East. So we're thinking about Nazareth, Bethlehem, Cana, Capernaum, the Holy Sepulchre, Gethsemane, all the holy places. We are there to welcome pilgrims that will come to these places and to maintain the shrines, to make sure that when you go to the Holy Land, you can come, you can celebrate the Mass over there, you can pray in the places where Jesus did so much for us. And at the same time, by being over there, we're taking care of the local Christians. So we have 18 schools, we have 23 parishes, we have different services that we give to the population. And the Christian population, unfortunately, is going down and has a lot of struggles, especially with the war right now. We hear a lot, and that's fair, about the difficulties that the Jewish people in the Holy Land have, that the Muslim people have, but the Christians also are struggling.
That's such a beautiful example for all of us who have been watching the war, obviously, for this team reporting on the war. What does it mean, then, for the Christians in the Holy Land to know that people around the world, the church around the world, are thinking about them, supporting them, especially in these difficult times of war and suffering?
It's very meaningful because the Christian population right now in the Holy Land is less than 2%. So that's a minority. And so what they hear in the place where they are, what they feel, they could feel alone. Right now, no pilgrims are going because of the war. Many people are afraid. So to support to the Good Friday Collection and to other through other initiatives, it's very important for them to understand that they are not alone, that their faith might look like a minority in the Holy Land, but that is something that changed the world.
Absolutely. It's a faith that we rely on as well. Well, Father David Grenier, Commissary of the Holy Land for the U.S., thank you.
Thank you.
Now, before we say goodbye, we'd like to invite you to spend Holy Week with us here on EWTN with special programming that begins this Sunday. It all begins Sunday morning with the solemn Mass of Palm Sunday live from St. Peter's Basilica. Then, throughout the week, we will air special live programming from Rome, Jerusalem, Washington, D.C., and more. To see the complete schedule, head over to EWTN.com. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram, and at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.